Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly, the films Napoleon, Saltburn, and May December.
The first movie I would like to talk about this week is one that people have been already talking about for a bit of time, and that is Napoleon. This is the new movie by Ridley Scott, and he is, of course, a very major director. He made a movie from the same time period decades ago called The Duelists, and he's made totally different kinds of movies like Alien and so forth. He's a really, he's a prolific and now older director. He's well into his 80s and still working, and in fact, still making a huge epic like this movie. And this is, as the title suggests, a sort of a potted history of Napoleon and of the Napoleonic era. Starts with the French Revolution and proceeds through a good part of Napoleon's career and all the different wars that he was involved in and battles that he started. And at the end of the movie, the very last thing is some text on the screen detailing the amazing number of people who were killed in these different major conflicts in which he played a central part. He was responsible, or at least participated in, the deaths of an enormous number of people. But then again, that's what wars do, and that's what battles do, and that's what armed conflicts do. And he was just somebody who was in that sort of stuff up to his funny looking hat throughout his entire career, pretty much. Actually, at the beginning of the movie, he's still just a soldier, but he rises in the ranks very quickly because apparently he does have a lot of brilliance as a military leader. However, the movie also has, of course, a parallel soundtrack that it is going down, and that is his love affair with Josephine, the famous Josephine. So we get his meeting Josephine and his falling in love with Josephine, and she just becomes the center of his life when he's not on the battlefield, at least. And they have a fairly conflicted relationship and all kinds of ups and downs and all of that. One of the big issues is that for some reason, and remember, this is a few centuries ago, so they aren't exactly sure for a while who's to blame, but either because of him or because of her, she seems unable to conceive an heir, and he really wants an heir. He wants preferably a son who could carry on when he is no longer carrying on. So that becomes a big conflict, and I won't reveal whose fault it turns, I shouldn't say fault, whose biological makeup turns out to be responsible for this, but that's another thing that happens in the movie, and they have quarrels about other things than that. So how is Napoleon as a movie? Well, I actually took the trouble to travel a little bit farther than I normally travel for the movies to see it in IMAX. So I saw it on that great big gigantic screen, and I can't say I found it any kind of a great movie. It's mainly a very well done movie. You see all of Ridley Scott's accumulation of technical skills just right up there on the screen. These huge, large-scale battle scenes and cannon go off, and there's ear-shattering sounds and all of that. And Ridley Scott really, really, really knows how to put that sort of thing on the screen. That said, the movie is basically alternating between being a big action movie and being a romantic movie about Napoleon and Josephine, again, with all kinds of conflicts within that romance. So it's basically two very conventional kinds of movies sort of stuck together. It's perfectly entertaining to watch, at least most of the time. At times, it's really old-fashioned, too, I have to say. Everybody knows where Napoleon's final downfall took place. And we have him standing in a room with some of his other great commanders who are going to be serving right under him. And there's a huge map on the floor, and he's walking around and talking about how many troops are arrayed against us here and so many troops are arrayed against us here. And then he says, "We will make our stand." And he plunks his staff down here. And of course, the screen fills with the word Waterloo on the map. Well, this is like something you might have seen in a Hollywood movie maybe in the 1920s or 1930s. It's really corny. But hey, it's sort of fun and sort of effective. And of course, we have some respite along the way, too, from the battle scenes and the romantic scenes when we have Napoleon exiled. He's exiled first to the island of Elba and finally to St. Helens. And so there we have a little bit of other sort of material enters into the whole thing. Now, Napoleon is played by Joaquin Phoenix. And the fact is that Joaquin Phoenix is one of the great actors of our time. He's really, really amazing. He's terrific. He's great. This movie doesn't allow him much room to be eccentric and offbeat and surprising the way he often is. He is a pretty conventional Napoleon. At times, he injects bits of Joaquin Phoenix style eccentricity or idiosyncrasy, and that's always a pleasure to see. Every once in a while, he has a terrific line to develop, such as at one point when he's over having a quarrel over dinner with Josephine, and he picks up his lamb chop and says, or I guess it's a pork chop, and says, "Destiny has given me this pork chop." Well, that's a pretty funny line. And Joaquin Phoenix delivers it in a fairly amusing way. I wish there were more of Joaquin Phoenix's own personal notions and gestures and idiosyncrasies in this movie than there are. But this is a Ridley Scott movie, not a Joaquin Phoenix movie. It's well done. It's not exciting. But if you like battle scenes and if you like a man arguing with his lovely wife, then Napoleon is the movie for you. Now I would like to move to a very different kind of movie, and this is Saltburn. And yes, that is a funny title, and it is, yes, the title of, the name of an estate in England, which is where a large part of the movie takes place. This is the second feature film by Emerald Fennell, and she's an interesting personality in today's movies. She's only directed one feature before now, a movie called Promising Young Woman about 3 years ago, in which she only plays a bit part. She's also an actor, as I'll mention in a moment. I didn't much like Promising Young Woman, but a lot of people thought it was a really amazing film and a great debut and all of that. Now she has made her second feature, but she's also an actor, and she's been in a lot of movies as an actor. Most recently, she plays Camilla Parker Bowles in The Crown, the excellent TV series The Crown. And she plays Midge in the Barbie movie that's still out right now. So she's an actor, and she also is a director, and this is her second feature. So what is Saltburn about? We have a young man who is going to Oxford. He's a smart young man. And we see him showing up at Oxford, and he's from sort of middle class stock, so he's not as elevated in the social status as so many of his colleagues are. And he has to sort of his name, by the way, is Oliver Quick. He has to kind of take a little time to get his footing and find his way around. And he makes the unlikely friendship of a very, very aristocratic young fellow student. And they become friends, and they have this sort of slightly tense relationship together, but they are good friends. And eventually, Oliver sort of starts to find his way around Oxford. And he knows what he's doing, and he's starting to feel a bit comfortable and all of that. And then his new friend, Felix, invites him to come and visit. You know, come to my family's house. So young Oliver, from the middle class background, he, by the way, is claiming that his background is sort of working class. It turns out that's not true. He's quite middle class. But anyway, he shows up at this very aristocratic, sprawling estate that Felix's family has. And there he has to kind of figure his way around and, you know, figure out where he is and what's going on and all that, and not be too intimidated by the extremely intimidating butler, whose name is Duncan and who is one of the best characters in the movie. So we have basically a fish out of water story here. At first, young Oliver is a bit out of his water at Oxford, and then he is very much out of his water when he gets to this aristocratic, lordly estate of his friend Felix. And there, all kinds of different things take place. And eventually, it turns out that certain things in the movie are not exactly as they seemed before, and we start to realize that Oliver, who has been the main character of the movie and presumably the hero of the movie, is not a very heroic person, maybe not even a very nice person. He gets into relationships with various people at Felix's estate, including some of the women there, who also turn out to have their own secrets and problems and difficulties and whatnot. So that is what Saltburn is about. I basically found Saltburn, a little bit irritating, to tell you the truth. I wasn't really crazy about it, especially near the end when I thought the plot got really tricky. And it didn't really take me in, and I just started to think it was taking on more than it was really prepared to deliver. Barry Keoghan is pretty good as Oliver Quick. Jacob Elordi, who's a good actor, is pretty good as Felix, the aristocratic guy. The women in the film are mostly pretty convincing. I really like Paul Reiss as Duncan, and by the way, Paul Reiss also is memorable in Napoleon, so this is a big week for him. But mostly I found Saltburn a little bit more satisfying than Promising Young Woman, which was Emerald Fennell's previous feature as a director, but I just didn't really take to it. Some people are really, really liking it. I found it a little bit mean-spirited, even a little bit ugly from time to time, so I could really do without it. Saltburn, if you're interested in sort of fish-out-of-water stories and stories about a young person finding his way in life, then you might be interested in it. But mainly, I found it just a bit too tricky for its own good, and the end of it, I'm going to mention Joaquin Phoenix again now, the end of it seemed to me to be sort of imitating the end of the recent movie Joker, where Joaquin Phoenix does this sort of loony little dance. And I really think that is maybe what Emerald Fennell had in mind for the end of Saltburn, and it just doesn't work in my view. So, interesting movie, not quite a successful movie. And for our final film today, I'd like to talk about May December, and it is exactly what the title may suggest. It is a story of one of these May December romances between people of wildly different ages. The movie was directed by Todd Haynes, to my mind an uneven director, but when he is at his best, a superb director. His movie Safe is, I think, arguably the very best movie of the entire 1990s. And some of his other movies have almost come close to that. And then he's made some that I don't like so much. May December, I would say, is not one of his very best movies, but certainly one of his very good movies. It's a movie that I really liked a lot, partly because it has an excellent cast featuring the wonderful Julianne Moore and the wonderful Natalie Portman. And they together are just a superb team. Also, Charles Melton has a very important in it, and he's not so well known as the other two, but he may well have a future in the movies. In any case, what is May December about? Well, this is based on the real case from quite a number of years ago of a woman named Mary Kay Letourneau, and she's not mentioned. This is a fiction movie, but it is based very closely on this case. Back in the late 90s, this woman named Mary Kay Fulau was a teacher who apparently fell in love with one of her students who was 12 years old. So you had this real life case of this woman. Who was, gee whiz, she was in her 30s, and she fell in love with this 12-year-old, and they had an affair, and she got pregnant, and then she was sentenced to jail, and she was told as part of the condition of getting a not very severe sentence that she had to stay away from this 12-year-old. He wasn't allowed to have any contact with her. Then they found her having contact with him again. And so then she was stuck back in jail, this time for a really long time, for several years. However, what happened after that, when she finally got out of jail, you know what? She went back to that kid who was no longer 12 years old. He was now in his late teens. She had another child by him, and then they got married, and they were married for 14 years. So you have this situation, which is like a reverse Lolita, with this much older woman and this 12-year-old boy, but it turns out it wasn't just sexual predator stuff. Apparently, they were really in love. They had a couple of kids together, and then they had years of marriage together when they were both older. So it's an interesting case, and I think quite a fascinating case to base a movie on. And that is exactly what we have here. We have this, you might call it a true crime movie, based on this real life case. So what we have is Julianne Moore as the woman. And by the way, this all takes place when everybody's grown up. So we have Julianne Moore as the main character, Gracie, who had this affair with this very, very young boy many years ago. They had a child together. They are now married, and time has passed. We have Natalie Portman as an actor who is going to play Gracie in a movie. And so she comes to visit Gracie as part of her research, to get to know Gracie, to get to know Gracie's family, to talk to all the people around her, to talk to her husband when he's at work, to talk to a place where she worked when she was very young, to investigate the place where she and the young boy first had sex together, stuff like this. So that's the basic setup of the movie. And what we have is Natalie Portman, who serves as our eyes and ears within the movie, investigating the current situation of Julianne Moore and getting to know the now grown young kid, with whom she had this affair, and see what their marriage is like and all of that. So it's really quite a fascinating story, and I think it is handled with a good deal of sensitivity. I think that it was a very, very good call on the part of the screenwriters and the director, Todd Haynes, to not have this be about the affair when it actually took place, which might have been a bit much for moviegoers to take in, but rather to have it be about them when they've grown up, when they've acquired some maturity, when their marriage is not a perfect one, but when they clearly are getting along together, and they clearly have a real, genuine, deep relationship. So it's a really interesting movie based on a really interesting case. I'll say once again that you can't do much better in terms of a cast than Julianne Moore and Natalie Portman. And I'll mention Charles Melton, who was very good in the movie too, although not my favorite in the movie. And the people who do most of the very small roles do very fine jobs as well. Mostly, it's directed in a smooth and persuasive and convincing style by Todd Haynes, one of the better directors that we have on today's movie scene, and I'm really glad to see that he is still turning out work of very, very high quality. So that is my somewhat varied story this week.
For which we thank you, as always and ever, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films Napoleon, Saltburn, and May December.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.